not quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keene,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life.
What's up? Welcome back. We're here today with Marty Terra from Linear Logics. We're going to get into his story and figure out what he's done to be successful and hear what he has to tell us. Welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
Right on. And before we get started, we're going to throw you through the gauntlet, which is about 10 rapid-fire questions just to get to know you a little bit.
Sounds good.
Married or single?
Single.
Any children?
No.
iPhone or Android?
Wait. Single? Didn't I just see you with some girl on Instagram?
Well, he said married or single, so if my
Okay. All right. We've made this mistake before.
Yes.
All right.
So we have to change the question.
Okay. Yeah. And
married, single, or dating?
There you go. Dating.
Okay. All right. We got somebody in trouble with that question. Yeah. Okay. So this is, we don't even have to edit this now.
No. Yeah. Boom. I appreciate that clarification.
I thought we had like a Dan Bilzerian in the house. Like, I was like, oh, okay. He's got it like that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
iPhone or Android?
Android.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll get into that.
Okay.
Favorite movie or book or both?
I really like Goodfellas.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Is that one as long as some of the other?
Is that a Scorsese?
I can't remember.
I've never watched it.
Because you know, some of the gangster movies get pretty long. I can't remember how long Goodfellas is.
Okay. Yeah.
It's no big deal. I was just curious. That's it kind of popped in my head.
Joe Pesci.
And
Do I look like a clown to you?
Ray Liotta.
Is that it? Is that
Ray Liotta, right?
Yeah.
That was a horrible Pesci. Do it again.
I didn't do a Pesci. Is that the scene with the whole, like, do I look like a clown to you? Blah, blah, blah.
No. Do it the way you did it before.
They can't. Oh, yeah, I guess they can. That's De Niro. That's your De Niro. Right on.
Y'all have to catch that on the video clips, guys.
Beer, whiskey, or wine?
Beer.
All right.
Craft or regular, like off the shelf?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Do you like Bud Light or like?
No, I don't like Bud Light.
Okay.
Like Corona, Shock Top.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, classy stuff.
I don't drink a whole lot, but.
All right. Classy stuff, Larry says.
Favorite genre of music?
Classic rock.
Okay. Like, what's your favorite band?
Oh, God.
Like Skinner?
Okay. What's a good band to you?
Rush.
Is that classic rock? I don't even know what classic rock is.
I think a classic rock is like Poison, Guns N' Roses, hair bands.
To me, it's like Skinnerd.
I think that is Southern rock.
Yeah, that is Southern rock, but that's classic to me.
It's classic too.
I'm fair with that. Okay, you know? Good.
I'd like to picture like my Jesus music. in the front row of a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, I'm with you.
Okay. Here we go. Next question. What do you drive?
A 2019 Corvette Grand Sport.
Woo! Big money, big money.
That sounds nice. Okay.
The last two.
Yeah, I know.
What the hell?
I make Jeremy uncomfortable when I shout big money, big money.
Why?
Because you like switch your legs.
You basic instinct us.
Here's for the video, right? I did. Next question. So when you pull up to a restaurant in that Corvette, is it reservations or... Just walking in.
I just walk in.
Yeah. Look, okay. When you have a Corvette, you can just walk in whatever the hell you want.
Okay, but I got a question. Do you valet or self-park that car?
Self-park.
Self-park. You're like, ain't nobody touching my crap.
I back it into the furthest away spot that I can find.
Okay.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. I do, but I love valeting too.
I don't.
Mm-mm. Really? Mm. Oh, I love it.
One time I was in Miami and went to a restaurant and... I parked the car and I walked off. I walked out and the guy's like, you have to valet here. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, here. I gave him the keys. And like literally like it's from like where I'm to you, right? Uh-huh. Like that's where my car is.
Yeah.
And he takes my keys and he puts it in his pocket. And it's like literally like to your front door is where the restaurant is.
Okay.
So it's like valet parking only, but it's like right here.
Okay, so did he repark your car, or is this like a Jimmy's wedding type of?
It's Jimmy's wedding.
Did you do this at Jimmy's wedding?
I did.
Okay. Well, did you do it somewhere else too, or no? Just that
I did, but I didn't see the valet parking sign. But I was, but I just found it very weird.
My question here is, and Jeremy's trying to get us back on track.
But
did you do this twice, or was this Jimmy's wedding story?
No, twice. This is like years ago.
Okay, because this just happened a couple weeks ago.
It did just happen years ago.
I don't think that's coincidence. I don't know.
I mean, twice out of like thousands.
Marty's a good time for you to go to the restroom or something. You can go now.
Jesus. Thousands. Thousands. People. He's not been to a valet parking thousands.
0.02%.
Okay. Go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Good. Marty, good?
Marty, you're going to self-park that thing for sure.
Yeah, I don't want anybody driving it.
Okay.
So Corey can't take it for a spin?
He can take it for a spin. I trust him.
See, look at that.
People I know.
Look at that.
People I know can drive.
No, I got your back. Like, I do not like the idea of, like, if they're... There's some spots where it's like, okay, they pull it over there. I can watch them pull it over there. But, like... There's some spots in Orlando where they take it out on the regular road and then go to a garage somewhere else.
Like Ferris Bueller's
Day
Off?
I've heard some horror stories.
Yeah, I ain't down with that.
Like Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah.
And they take the car and they're like...
It's got a, valet mode. You can put it in valet mode so they can't go over a certain speed.
Oh, that's nice. See, my rat rod, I pulled up to the valet in Daytona with my rat rod. They said, you can self-park this. I swear to God that happened. And it was a valet-only place.
They didn't get their tetanus shot.
Yeah, they said, nah.
That's they said, fantastic.
You can self-park this.
You're going to have to put a post of your rat rod.
Yes.
I almost cut a big gash on my head getting into your rat rod.
Yeah,
I mean, you need a tetanus shot before you get in.
Yeah, Corey, so quick story about the rat rod. I needed a truck. And I said, does anybody have a truck? Corey's like, I have a truck. I was like, okay, pick me up. The dude shows up in the rat rod. Like, that's all he had. I had no idea about this rat rod. I was like, okay. Fair enough.
It got the job done, though.
It's beautiful.
It got the job done.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Sorry. It's fine. All right. Two more questions. Favorite type of food?
Say again?
Favorite type of food?
Food.
He's got the Toms today. That's the word we use for mumbles.
I thought he said feud.
Yes.
Yeah, he did say feud. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Probably... American and or Italian. I like them both.
Okay.
And the city you live in?
Sebastian.
Right on.
All right.
All right, Marty. So you and your dad start Linear Logics. What year did you guys start?
Well, the company's been around since, I think, 97, but it was doing a different type of business back then. That's when my dad ran it. I was very young, but we reopened a new business. We do electrical engineering, software engineering. We've been around for doing that for, I want to say at least 5 years now.
Okay.
So
did your dad run Linear Logics? Because he worked for GE, right? Was it GE he worked for?
Yeah, he did work for GE.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was running Linear Logics as he worked for them?
No. So Linear Logics was started after he left GE.
Okay.
And, it was started with the understanding that some of the people he was working with would also leave with him, and they could kind of, there was a niche that needed to be filled in the automation industry for freight rail yards.
Uh-huh.
And our rail yards just in America are just, they're pretty outdated. And, you know, if you look at the rail industry in a lot of other countries, they're way ahead of us in tech. And not only for commuter, but also for freight transportation. And GE used to design control systems to speed up the process of pushing cars or getting cars classified in what are commonly called classification yards.
Okay.
Basically, like you can think of them as just kind of like an airport, but for rail yards, where a string of cars will come in. They all have a different destination. You know, shippers are basically sending their supplies or shipping whatever they need to ship across the country, and they'll their car or their shipments will be attached to a string of cars, and a train will pull them into a classification yard, and that yard will pull each car apart and they'll classify it into its own little track, and each track goes to a different part of the country, and it just keeps doing that, kind of like mail hubs as well. It just keeps going through multiple.
Do they have it like already, like does each car have like a QR code or like a certain like scanner that just scans and gets pushed one direction and then the other kind of shuffles through?
Yeah, typically they have a tag, an RFID tag, and they get scanned. And when it gets scanned, it has everything about the destination, the shipper, the contents, if it's biohazard, you know, stuff like that.
I guess I've never really thought about that. I just figured it went in the car. Gets there. It got it just went. You know, like
it's magic.
Like I figured they put it, you know, in the car in Miami, and then if it's going to California, it just goes to California. But I guess
it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah,
sounds like
so. In these shipyards, I feel like there's probably tons of different tracks there where it can kind of get fed into each one, so it makes its own long.
Yeah, some classification yards have as many as, 30, 40, 50 tracks. They're called ladder tracks. And okay. It's like a, you can look at it like a rung of ladder, like a, you know, ladder rungs when you look up from the sky and you look down on it, and they'll just, you know, wherever it needs to go, they'll kick it into one of those tracks and for each car, and they'll rebuild the car. They'll pull them apart and rebuild them, and then they'll that string will be off to the next.
To the next, and then redo it until it's all the same.
Eventually, it'll all be going to the same location.
Okay, so your dad's working for GE, and so he finds this niche market for.
Well, but before you get into that, so you mentioned that your dad was supposed to go with a bunch of folks. Did they come along or no?
So the deal is, GE was providing automation systems, and we can talk about that in a bit, but they were providing automation systems for these rail yards, and they didn't want to do it anymore because there wasn't enough money in it. I don't know how much they were spending on man hours, employees. You know, I don't know what not enough money is to GE, but I imagine, you know, this industry probably, or this market probably just wasn't doing it for them. And so they stopped providing control systems. But the thing is, GE still provides, they sell pneumatic switches. They're automatic smart switches. And if you know what a rail yard switch is, it's what changes the position of a track at a certain juncture. So when a train's coming up on it, you know, those handheld levers that the old school, you know, you watch Western, those old school videos.
Yeah. The Western,
the engineer lasso will hop
it
out.
They lasso it ahead of time and turn it.
Yeah, yeah. They'll hop out, they'll throw the switch by hand and then they'll hop back in, and then they'll go, you know, the direction they need to go. So these automatic switches are smart switches with radios and circuit board in it, and you can control it from a distance.
Okay.
You can control it, you know, from a tower, from a panel, you know. So it speeds things up quite a bit. GE didn't want to make the control systems to control their switch. They just wanted to sell their switch. So as soon as they stopped doing that, customers said, well, why would I buy the switch if I can't get a control system for it? It's useless. I mean, you can still walk up to it and push the button. It's easier than pulling a lever, but that's not what it was designed for.
Yeah.
So he said, well, there's a lot of people complaining, and we can do that because he designed most of the control systems when he was working for GE, so he's very familiar with them. And he said, we'll just, you know, hop out, open a company, and just do this ourselves. There's plenty of demand. We know the customers. You know, we know there's demand for it. We can just kind of jump right into it and start filling that, you know, filling that need.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
So him and a group of other guys just said they were going
to
do it?
Yeah, I think there were a couple, two or three other guys that were like, yeah, we'll do that with you. And when the time came to, you know, they were like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to risk it.
It's so hard.
it's that jump. It is. It's tough for people.
Yeah. But your dad said, you know what? To hell with you. I'm doing it anyways.
Yeah.
Well, that's about the time that, you know, he wasn't going to go in alone. So he asked me, and I have a legal studies degree, and I was about to take the LSATs and head to law school. I was going a totally different path, but I've grown up around computers and technology my whole life. So the law school thing was just to give myself a future and a stable career. And he said, you want to do this with me? I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Hell yeah.
So okay. We jumped into it. And
yeah.
So did you have to go another route for school purposes, or did you have enough background where you could just learn on the job?
So I've pretty much been doing this my whole life. You know, I've been writing code since I was like 12 years old. So as long ago as I can remember. So pretty much what they were doing, I was able to just jump in and figure it out.
What do you write in mainly? Or back then, at least?
My first language was Visual Basic.
Okay.
And I do Visual Basic, C++, C#. I do a lot of stuff. So
yeah. That means nothing to us regular folks. So
I know what it means, but I don't know what it means. It's like I understand it, but yeah, don't. So
and,
I get it.
And C is really important, especially when you go into OS level stuff.
Hardware level stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, C is, you know, it's really, you can use operating systems with C, but C is for just bare metal applications.
Right.
Like directly onto a microprocessor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is probably what you.
We do a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense. So
when he asked you, you were like, yeah, screw this LSAT stuff.
Well, did you take the LSAT?
No. Okay. I had the flashcards. I was getting ready. I was getting ready to study and take it. And I was just like, you know what?
You were like,
let's do the fun. You know, I pick the fun option. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Which honestly, that's a great point, because how old were you at that point?
Probably around 29, 28.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess you were a little older. So, I mean, it wasn't like a just, you know, not like you were 20 and said, yeah, screw this, I'm going to go do the computer thing.
It's still impressive though, right? Because like, in a sense, you're trying to really set yourself up for the rest of your life. And then you're just saying, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. It sounds exciting, et cetera, right? I mean, were you working somewhere else at that time?
No, I was just at home. I was not working. I was just studying for school. That's pretty much all I was doing at the time. So I didn't have any, you know, I was actually still, I think I was still living at home at the time too, even. Well, I might have been living next door. I actually live right next door to my dad. My grandparents lived in that house. So at the time, I think I was living next door actually on my own, but...
So being that
I took a long time to finish to get my 4 year. Now, yeah. I did it.
So even though you went into law for that stable career, you had to have at least some interest or some love of law then.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, cause I'm like a pretty logical thinker, but I don't think I would have enjoyed law because of that.
Law has no logic.
It's very vague. It's very, you know, yeah, it can be very twisted gray. Sometimes. A lot of gray area. Yeah, exactly. Gray. So,
and there's no creativity. Like to me, like,
oh no, there's a lot of creativity.
But
to get away with it, or
yeah,
once you see a good lawyer, there's a lot
of
creativity.
You have to be creative. Exactly. Yeah.
Agreed, but I think what I'm thinking of is more like for me, like on the programming side, you're actually not creating something from scratch.
Yes,
right, and that's what I meant is that you're actually making something that works, and you see it at work versus manipulating something.
Yeah, I'm more suited to design something and know what I'm doing is going to have a certain result rather than diving into
then a maybe that's like judged
entering a
by
courtroom
somebody.
And not knowing what's going to happen. But I was looking at going into real estate law, so that would have, you know, not like the whole what you see on the movies, you know, the prosecutors. Yeah. I wasn't looking to do that because I'm
because I know, you know, just from you being Marty is my brother, my older brother's friend. They've been friends for a long time, and I always knew you were like into computers and stuff like that, you know. But Will had told me that you were going to law school to be a real estate attorney, and I was like, it really didn't add up in my head, but I was like, good for him, you know, like absolutely, yeah. You know, like whenever I did hear it, I was like, yeah, it didn't add up in my head, you know. But
so the thing with, you know, my dad has his PhD in computer science, and you know, he's a programmer / electrical engineer, and it was kind of him that kind of pushed me. He's like, you don't want to be a programmer. They're a dime a dozen. There's just so many programmers out there. A lot of stuff gets outsourced. You just can't pull in a good salary. I mean, there are programmers that pull in a good salary, right? But a lot of them might live in Silicon Valley, you know, those big, you know, E4 level engineers that are, you know, but in general, I was just kind of under the impression that he's probably right. Like I probably wouldn't be able to make a really comfortable living as a programmer. And I don't think that's what I want to do anyway, but working for yourself, it's different. We're designing things. We're creating solutions, and it's a lot more fun than just sitting down and writing code.
You're not. Yeah, I could see where that comes into play, because if you're working for somebody else, it's going to be like the same thing where you're doing. You said you have different projects all the time, so it's something different.
Yeah, exactly.
So was your dad like upset at these people when they kind of bailed on him, or was
he
just? Like,
I don't think he was surprised. He's taken risks and opened his own business before. You know, when he first started the company in '97, they did IPAC. The compact IPAC, remember that a long time ago?
Okay.
Little handheld PDAs that they had, and they were their fad for a little while.
What did he do for those?
He did repairs on those. People with broken screens needed you know, new screens and stuff because there was no market for it.
So he was like the first iFix.
Yeah, I was about to say he's the original iFix.
That's a good point, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yep, that's what he did, and there was just nobody in the country that was just doing these repairs, and he was like, we'll do that, so... He would always have people shipping in. I was young at the time, but I remember they'd always be getting boxes. They would do the whole tear it apart, you know, nice and clean. They had a little clean area for it, and they'd put the new screen on and send it back the same day. And people were like, wow, that's...
So how long ago was that?
That was in 97, I think.
Think about that, right? Like, how did he get the word out? For people to be shipping
online.
It in?
There were forums that, you know, because, you know, the internet wasn't super huge back then. I mean,
it wasn't.
There was no, you know, crazy... You know,
but if you had a PDA back then, you probably knew something.
You were
about
probably
the internet.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
There were limited forums and areas where people would talk about this stuff. So it was actually probably pretty easy to get the word out.
Yeah. I remember the compact, the handspring.
I don't remember.
My dad had one at one point. I remember. I think me and my brother bought it for him for like Christmas. It was some type of PDA.
Yeah.
Like, and big, now, you think about it now, and it's like,
well, it's people's phone now.
Yeah, that's your phone. That's your phone. Like, yeah, everybody has it now. Everybody it's just your it. Phone.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just exactly. ahead of the curve.
Yeah. They really were.
Yeah, no,
they were.
You know, with the little stylus pen.
Yes.
You know,
It had, yeah. I think it even had a rollerball, like almost like a BlackBerry.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. BlackBerry had the rollerball.
But I think it was something else. I don't think it was a BlackBerry.
And then you even had the Windows. There was actually a Windows OS on it where it had, like, you can click on the start button. It was crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but they fall off.
So did he quit or stop doing business after those fell off, or did he always keep it open doing different stuff?
He went to work for some other companies, and eventually, you know, once I graduated, we moved to Florida here in Sebastian, and that's kind of where he started working for GE.
Okay.
But yeah, he's worked a few companies.
So he wasn't with GE very long then, huh?
He was there for quite a while.
Okay.
You know, he's got his pension and everything. I mean, he was there for a while. I don't know how many years he was there, but at least I want to say 6 or 7, I think.
Okay.
I had to guess.
Yeah. So when he says, all right, I'm going to do this, you know, we're going to service these other customers, did he have a plan on how to get other customers besides rail yards, or was he just like, ah, that'll do for now, and we'll figure out the rest later?
It really was just strictly rail yard automation. That's just what, you know, he left a 6-figure salary for that because he believed so much that it could be profitable. And it was.
So do you remember, or like, can you recount like the first sale?
Yeah. Our first sale was the Belt Railway over in Chicago, and they're one of the biggest conglomerate classification rail yards in the country. Mm-hmm. They're owned by several different major railroads. So that was our first customer.
So your dad's a tech guy, obviously. He's got his PhD in computer engineering, you said?
Computer science, yeah.
Computer science. So is he a salesman too?
No.
Okay. So who does that sale? Like, how's that work out?
Or is it because you're really the only game in town?
So the thing is, we get a lot of people coming to us.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Okay. Like,
you don't have to sell it.
We don't spend a lot of our time trying to sell, mainly because we are only 3 people, and we get enough work coming in usually on a yearly basis that we're always busy.
Okay.
You know, we're usually busy with something. So, and you know, with these kind of contracts, you really only need a few for the year, and they take a long time and they take a lot of focus and effort. So once we do get a couple, you know, we're good for the year. Usually, hopefully if we can get a couple, but we've gone years where we don't get any. There's doing contract work. There's always that risk.
Sure.
That you take.
When you get these contracts, how long do they usually last? Like, when you get one, how long does it usually take?
If we're installing a brand new system, it could take up to 6 months.
Okay.
Sometimes if it's, you know, modifying a system, it could take a couple months, you know.
Now, when that first sale was made, and if you don't want to answer, it's fine. But when the first sale was made, was the product finished?
So describe what you mean by, was it finished?
What was it a...
That's so one. That's one tech guy talking to another tech guy.
Yeah. So what was it, like a minimal viable product, or was it like a full fledged, or where were we at when the sale was already made?
It was a full fledged product. It was complete.
It was complete.
It was complete. It was tested. It was working, and it was suitable for that application.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Because you hear the stories, right, where like you make the sale, but it's not necessarily like, there. But then, like, the upside for the customer is that while the product isn't finished, they actually have the ability to make some modifications. So they can actually give you some input on what they'd like to see.
We did make some modifications because every customer wants something different. Even though we have a working product that it's a software suite and, you know, the hardware that goes with it to communicate with the software. But, you know, we have that product, but it's always going to be a different application depending on what the customer wants. We might have to make changes. For example, that customer wanted us to add the ability to control a crossing gate that they have inside their yard for vehicles, for employee vehicles that have to drive around through the rail yard. It was dangerous to be driving trucks over tracks because it's a hump yard. They classify those cars by driving them literally up onto a hill, pulling a pin and releasing it. And once the train is released, it's hard to stop it sometimes. So, and there okay. were, and you had
you
guys,
want, I could see that
you had guys and employees and trucks who were constantly driving them, you know, in front of that rolling, you know, that rolling car, and
they're like, I can make it.
Yeah. So they put a little gate.
Well, when you said antiquated, I didn't, you know, you said we had some antiquated technology in our rail yards. I'm like, pulling a pin and just letting it fly downhill seems
that's pretty antiquated. Yeah.
But if you think about it, there's no, you know, you're saving on fuel.
I guess
gravity is a great way to move a very, very heavy car.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And does it just slam into the other one and hook together? Or?
There's wheel retarders. They're hydraulic. They're pneumatic wheel retarders. And they're these big, long set of clamps that it's kind of like on a car, your brakes on a car. It's the same theory, but it's a long strip of clamps on each side of the track, and they have them positioned throughout throughout on each track. And the computer system that they use, it's actually a very complex system for humping cars. It takes into account the weight of the car, what type of car it is, where it's going, which track, how full that track is, so it knows how fast it needs to be going. It takes wind speed into consideration.
Wow. Okay.
So these clamps are automated to clamp it down to a certain speed based on which track it's going into and how far it needs to go into that track.
Do you guys work with those as well, like the automation of those?
I would love to, but we don't.
Okay.
We don't work with hump yard systems, but that would be a great thing to get into it, but it's very expensive. It takes a lot of working capital to test a system and to come up with a, you know, you'd almost have to have your own little private rail yard
to try it out.
Oh yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. Cause you can't just walk into a major yard and be like, well, let's give it a shot. You know,
hey, can I play with this for a while?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I have this rope? Can I have this
There's
rope?
No hazardous chemicals in this one, are there? No.
So do you guys install them too? Like, did you go to Chicago and install your hardware or?
Yeah. We actually drove it there. Our first sale, we drove it cause we didn't want to screw it up. We didn't want to ship it. So we threw it all in the back of an SUV that we rented, and we drove it all the way up to Chicago.
Okay. Was there any like fake it till you make it? Like, we've done this before? Or was it like, hey guys, this is our first time?
Well, like, I think this is like really the first automation in general, right?
So my dad had been part of many installs with GE. He understood the product. He understood everything that was involved with it. He understood the industry. He understood the people in the industry. So when I joined, I was kind of freaking out because I was, you know, I had never done this before. I'm not,
I could see that.
I'm not
you're like, I just I quit college for this.
Like, I finished that. College.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just quit law school for this. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I was kind of learning as I went personally. Okay. He's as cool as a cucumber. I mean, he's, you know,
I could see
them
that.
Like it was, I was, you know, I talked to him, my voice might crack a little, you know, but. I figured it out, you know.
Yeah, I remember doing my first implementation on my own as well, and you just feel like you're on an island.
Yeah.
So you're just freaking out. You're like, oh man, this thing better work.
I think it's like any job, really. You know, if you go
on the job,
if you have a new career that you're entering, and you know, you get the job, and you know, you walk in, you don't know what's going on. You have to figure it out. You know, you could be as educated as the next person and learn everything in school, but doing it in person in real life is totally different than what you learn in school.
Now you can throw me in the deep water, and I'm like, it's fine.
But it definitely had to be nice to at least know that you had somebody that you truly trusted to be your sounding board when you felt like you might be off or something. Because
he did a lot of the talking.
If you work for someone you just started working for, you didn't really know him, you might be scared to even ask him a question you were going to sound like you're an idiot or something's wrong.
I'm sure I did. He threw me into the piranha pool a few times, you know. but you have to do that, you know.
That's the best way to learn.
I was really nervous back then, you know. But after that job, I kind of learned the language. I learned the lingo because I didn't know anything about rail yards. And there's a lot of terminology. And luckily, you know, rail yard employees are very laid back people. They're very easygoing for the most part.
That's awesome.
And, you know, so it was.
And they're union guys most of the time.
They're like, union.
Hey. Take as long as you want.
Yeah,
I'm on the clock.
So you mentioned that your solution is not necessarily just rail yards. It could be other things. What is another interesting area that your technology helps with?
The thing about our company is we're just classified as an engineering company. You know, not a transportation or a rail yard engineering. We're just an engineering firm. And my dad is the electrical engineer. He's been doing it for 40 years. I've been doing software for a long time, and I have a background now in electrical engineering because I've self-educated myself on it. So, you know, I can read schematics and I can help design, you know, circuit boards and everything now. But mainly he does the hardware, I do the software. And with those two disciplines, you can do a lot. You can, another customer we had was, we designed a wireless temperature system for the National Weather Service. And, it was for the NOAA cooperative program where they have a bunch of people all over the country who help take, measurements, temperature measurements in certain areas where there's no equipment to do that. And it basically, every day they combine all this weather information and it helps meteorologists to better forecast and learn about, you know,
what's going on. Awesome.
What did you say?
I said it helps meteorologists better lie to us.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
But
did they come to you for that?
No. One of our other coworkers, he's actively searching government solicitations, and we're looking for work. We do look for work. We just don't advertise, you know, too much, but we'll always go out and we'll look for work out on the main government sites.
It's probably good too to kind of get some other jobs because now your expertise expands, which opens up for more and more direction. Yeah.
So have you guys done other stuff besides NOAA and the rail yards, or do you guys do any little projects or little stuff, or is it mainly like major stuff that you're doing?
Right now, I think some of the stuff that sounds major is kind of small. We just finished putting together some cables for the Department of Defense. I think for the Navy, they had some sort of missiles. I don't know if they were air-to-air, surface-to-air, but there were some missiles that, you know, were that needed a cable design.
Wait. Are you allowed to talk about this? Don't get my house.
No,
like, on a map somewhere. Like, I don't.
We're good.
Okay. All right.
But we designed some cables. We had some schematics and we put them together for them and we tested them. And, you know, sometimes you get small jobs like that. Sometimes you get big ones.
Okay.
Did you get the cables at AutoZone?
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
So that sounds, that's pretty great. So if I was to try and get a job out of, you know, figure out like what government jobs there are, is there like a site that you can go to?
Yeah, but don't ask me because I don't deal with it too much.
Okay.
I've seen it, but I don't know what it is, to be honest. I could figure it out, but I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm sure Google search will.
I prefer actually doing the creative stuff, not searching for jobs.
Okay. Yeah.
Stay pretty busy then?
Yeah. I mean, this year was pretty busy. Last year was really busy. We stay busy. We do.
Yeah.
We've only had one year where I think we were like, well, we're not getting any work this year. What's going on? But that's only because most of our projects, you know, they came in at the end of 1 year and we finished everything at the end of 1 year and nothing really came in because, you know, these companies that we work with have to budget money. And usually if it's not budgeted by the end of the year, they're not going to spend it at the beginning of the next year. So it was just kind of one of those years where they didn't budget, but we knew that there was a lot of work coming up for the next year. So we just kind of went through the year doing smaller jobs, but.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty typical, right? Especially with budgeted entities. And a lot of them, if they don't have the money, if they have a little bit of surplus, they will reach out to you and be like, hey, we have X. Can we go ahead and use it now? Because if we don't use it,
they don't get it next year. Yeah. That's another thing. If they don't, you know, a lot of some of these places, you know, we do get extra work sometimes because they just want to spend their money on something because if they don't spend it,
it doesn't get put back in the budget.
Next year, they say, well, you didn't need this much, so maybe we'll cut you back for the next year. But
I think it's every business budget. Now,
yeah, it sounds yeah. Right. You're probably right.
Now, would you guys like to grow? Would you like to have 20 people underneath you or not underneath you necessarily or working for you?
Not really. I mean,
I can see as a big company, as like a Chicago rail yard, which you said is a pretty big.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah.
Huge. I could see the value in going to a smaller company, knowing that you're the one that's putting the food on their table. Like they're going to treat you. You're not just another number.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah. Like, you know, that there's three guys that are dedicated to you. The entire company is dedicated to you because you're their big project right now.
Yeah. That is kind of one of the big selling factors for, you know, when it comes to our company is that we are small and that we can give the attention and I can give you a phone number and they'll be able to reach me 24/7.
Yeah.
If they have a problem, when you start working with bigger corporations, you lose that.
So what is your competition? Like, is there, I mean, how many people are in this game or is it fairly limited and that makes it
easier?
There's
a few, you know, but we strictly deal with, you know, the Hydra switch. It's a specific switch that's designed by GE, but we're willing to work with any switch really, but
with that there's certain one, you're one of the main.
That's kind of like what we entered the market, you know. working around.
It kind of reminds me of the book Small Giants. It's a book about basically small companies that don't want to grow, but they kill it. And it's mainly because they're small. And like there's like an FX firm out of California that Lucasfilms actually farms stuff out to. And there's like 10 people. But
yes, I've actually heard of them.
Yeah, I don't. The name is escaping me right now, but they kill it.
The only reason I've heard of them, like the son of one of the dudes was just on Antiques Roadshow with his box.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
But that's what I know about
it. And it was in that book. And there was like another, like there's like a brewery called Anchor Brewery. That one I remember. I don't know.
imagine that.
but nonetheless, yeah, it kind of talks to what Corey's saying, where it's very intimate, right? So the person that's actually looking for that project, you're the one that's actually doing it. You have a lot of skin in the game as well to make it work. And if they complain, they complain right to you.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there's
or
not,
if
there's,
they want to hug you, they hug you. Right.
Exactly. I mean, there's
not
really,
now, though.
There's no, you're not chasing around trying to find someone to get on the phone with you, going through the automatic, you know, you call and you get the automated, you know, not, you know, we don't, you know, lead customers in circles trying to get support or trying to get help, you know, with anything or answers.
It's got to be huge to be able to like call the number and know that you're getting right to the source.
You don't get
you're not getting.
Especially, I mean, not just right to the source. I mean, you're not getting to like the manager, the boss. You're getting to the guy that wrote the code.
That's exactly. What I mean.
The engineer will usually pick up.
Yeah. So it's like.
So working for yourself, right? People think that you're always on, that you're the boss. What do you say to people that think that, you know, you're your own boss, you get to do whatever the hell you want.
Yes, you don't have
to punch in 9 to 5. What do you say to that?
So it's a yes and no. You know, I can dictate my own schedule. And if I really want to take a day off for an emergency or whatever.
Or a podcast.
I can do that, but yeah, no, you're good and you're outside my working hours, but it's a lot of work. I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard this before from people who run their own business. I mean, some people are maybe lucky enough to just kill it so bad that they can take, you know, 3 days off a week and, you know, just spend a couple more doing their actual job, but it's a lot of work. It's accounting, you know, planning, customer relations,
marketing.
There's so many other hats that the business owner has to wear that people don't even think
marketing
about.
Product, you know, R&D, you know, it's the list goes on. It's
and how do you keep the lights on, right?
Yeah.
That's the main thing in my opinion is how do you keep the lights on? And it's really balancing all of those aspects that you just mentioned.
So we're very fortunate in that, you know, we do own our own building, our office building. So we're fortunate in that, you know, we still do have a loan on it, but we put a lot down. So we're comfortable with our loan. And, you know, other than that, we don't have a lot of overhead. You know, what we do specifically is actually very low overhead. So our cost of doing, you know, a job is actually very low compared to what we get in return for finishing the job. It's just very time consuming and we have to make sure everything is right. So it's.
Yeah, they're paying you for your hours, not necessarily.
And we don't take a, you know, at first, you know, and I still don't really. We never really took big paychecks home. You know, we always put it back into the business because that's what you usually have to do if you want to make sure your business isn't gonna die the 1 year that you don't get any contracts coming in. If you spend it like you make it, you're gonna run into a wall.
Yeah,
it's
my problem.
It's a lot of discipline.
We spend it like we don't make it. I don't even know what our analogy is.
There's a button there. We spend it, but don't make it.
We spend it even when we don't make it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're just swiping the credit card, I guess. I don't even know the analogy for our business
There
model.
Isn't one. There isn't one.
It's jumping off a cliff or something.
Yeah. No. So, running your own business, you don't have any other employees except for you and your dad?
We have another employee. It's my dad's friend. They worked at Compaq together a long time ago, and he's an engineer / he's the guy that does all the searching for solicitations.
Did he come from the West Coast?
He came from Texas.
Texas.
I used to live in Texas. Me and my dad lived in Texas.
Where in Texas?
Spring, Texas. Was that like an hour from Houston? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's been a long time, but around there.
Okay. Interesting.
It was a nice little town.
Do you like Texas barbecue?
I like any kind of barbecue, just about.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said you're from Texas, but you said American food. I guess American food is barbecue, right?
Texas is a state in America.
Yeah, but he said his favorite food was American or
I
Italian.
You give it, you got
to
take it.
Like, you seemed like you needed some like explanation. Explanation. That was the word I was looking for.
I was just letting you work through it. Okay. Talk through it. Talk yourself through it. Get to it.
I got there.
Yeah.
I got there.
Yeah, you did.
I got there.
All right. All right. Yeah. So Marty, one of the last questions that we always ask our guests here, based on your life experiences, what is something you can impart on our listeners?
I would say, you know, from a business, from starting a, you know, from the perspective of someone who maybe wants to start a business, I would say don't be afraid of, you know, what it takes to succeed. Don't be intimidated by, you know, jumping in with a customer and, you know, learning the ropes as you go along. You know, a lot of people might be scared to get into a business because they don't know how the accounting works. They don't know how to talk to customers. They don't know how to manage this or that. I would say that you're going to fail, but you're going to figure it out. If you try hard enough, you're gonna get there, and just don't be intimidated by that process.
Absolutely,
yeah. That's great advice.
That's great advice because, it's hard to make that jump.
Yes,
it really is.
Yeah. All right. If anybody does need any engineering work done or owns a rail yard, where do they find you at?
LinearLogix.com.
All right, guys.
What about Instagram, socials?
We don't do a lot of that. Not yet.
Okay. Listen, they're big.
About email?
Like my work email?
I don't know.
Yeah, sure. What's your work email?
martin.terra@linearlogix.com.
All right. All right.
Just tell me you enjoyed the episode.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll. All right, guys.
Thank you so much.
As always, if you've got any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fullgorillalife@gmail.com.
And if you want to see what's going on social media, find us on Instagram and Facebook at Full Gorilla Life and on Twitter at Gorilla Full.
And please visit our website, fullgorilla.life. And please hit subscribe on your podcast app of choice.
Later.